trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all that you do, and he will show you which path to take.
This is Mission 66, brought to you by TWR and the Bible Teaching Ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. Today we dive into the reign of King Solomon, the temple builder, in the book of 2 Chronicles. God's provision and man's unfaithfulness are on display as John Matthews and Esther Sisulu take us through each chapter. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide at mission66.org. Let's begin.
Our journey in the Bible continues today, and we'll be focusing in on the second book of Chronicles, which narrates mostly the history of the kings of Judah in the Old Testament. Now, we'll be looking at chapters 13 through to 16 as we learn about Judah's kings Abijah and his son Asa. And our teacher, John Matthews, will lead us in today's episode with the theme, Human Frailty.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66. Wherever you join us from today, it is so good to have your company. And you join us on our journey as we're in this Old Testament book of 2 Chronicles, which tells us about the kings of Judah. And today we're focusing on chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16. And we're now at the time of King Abijah's reign, also the reign of King Asa. Now, by way of background at the beginning here, in our last episode, we were learning about King Rehoboam, who's Solomon's son, and he reigned until around 913 BC before Christ. Well, he had a son called Abijah, and he was next in line to become the king of Judah. Now, we don't have too much information about him in the book of Kings, but here in Chronicles, Abijah is described in more detail, which apparently was provided by the writings of the prophet Iddo, who lived during this time span, but whose writings didn't become part of the Bible itself. Now, in this text, Abijah of Judah rises up and goes to war against King Jeroboam of Israel. By now, Israel in the north was divided against Judah in the south. And last time we found out that it was God himself who brought about this schism, this divide. And so it was called the Divided Kingdom. He told the people of Israel and Judah not to go to war against each other. But Abijah, well, he took it upon himself to go to war against Jeroboam, even though he was outnumbered 2-1. So let's read chapter 13, starting at verse 4. Then Abijah stood up on Mount Zeboraim, that is in the hill country of Ephraim, and said, "Hear me, O Jeroboam, and all Israel. Ought you not to know that the Lord God of Israel gave the kingship of Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt? Yet Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, a servant of Solomon, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his Lord, and certain worthless scoundrels gathered around him and defied Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young and irresolute and could not withstand them. And now you think to withstand the kingdom of the Lord in the hand of the sons of David, because you are a great multitude and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made you for gods? Have you not driven out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron, and the Levites, and made priests for yourselves like the peoples of other lands? Whoever comes for ordination with a young bull or seven rams becomes a priest of what are not gods. But as for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. We have priests ministering to the Lord who are sons of Aaron and Levites for their service. They offer to the Lord every morning and every evening burnt offerings and incense of sweet spices, set out the showbread on the table of pure gold, and they care for the golden lampstand that its lamps may burn every evening. For we keep the charge of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him. Behold, God is with us at our head, and his priests with their battle trumpets to sound the call to battle against you. O sons of Israel, do not fight against the Lord, the God of your fathers, for you cannot succeed. And the crux here of Abijah's argument is the legitimacy of Judah's claim grounded in their covenant which God had made with King David. And even though it was not God's will to have them fighting one another, a pitched battle by now couldn't be avoided, and Jeroboam strikes first, and Judah faced attacks from both the front and the rear, and so they cry out to God for help. The priests sound their trumpets, the men of Judah shout a war cry, and at the sound of this mighty war cry, God routs Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And so Judah inflicts a massive defeat on Israel, killing 500,000 of Jeroboam's soldiers. That's 500,000 men. And now Abijah presses the advantage with Jeroboam on the run. And Abijah captures the cities of Bethel, Jeshana, and Ephron. And it says Jeroboam never regained power, and the Lord struck him down and he died. Meanwhile, Abijah grows stronger. He takes 14 wives. He has 22 sons and 16 daughters. And then after Abijah's death, he is succeeded by his son Asa. And there was 10 years of peace during Asa's reign, which was from around 910 to 869 BC. That's about 41 years. And Asa was blessed by God and took great strides to eliminate idol worship from Judah. And this is chapter 14, verse 2, which says, "And Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places, and broke down the pillars, and cut down the Asherim, and commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out of all the cities of Judah the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him. He built fortified cities in Judah, for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, for the Lord gave him peace. And he said to Judah, 'Let us build these cities and surround them with walls and towers, gates and bars. The land is still ours, because we have sought the Lord our God. We have sought him, and he has given us peace on every side.' So they built and prospered. And Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large shields and spears, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. And all these were mighty men of valor. And yet Asa faced a challenge from the Ethiopians under a leader called Zerah. It says he had 1,000,000 men, which would have outnumbered Judah more than 2 to 1. And yet, despite the odds, Asa emerges victorious, praying, 'O Lord, you are God. Let not man prevail against you.' In fact, it says the entire Ethiopian army is wiped out, no survivors. And now in chapter 15, we see more about Asa. The Spirit of God, says verse 1, came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said to him, 'Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you, but if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For a long time Israel was without the true God, and without a teaching priest, and without law. But when, in their distress, they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, he was found by them." And skipping to verse 7, it says, "But you take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded, he took courage and put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he had taken in the hill country of Ephraim. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was in front of the vestibule of the house of the Lord. And he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and all those from Ephraim, Manasseh and Simeon, who were residing with them, for great numbers had deserted to him from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with him. And they were gathered at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of the reign of Asa, and they sacrificed to the Lord on that day from the spoil that they had brought 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep. And they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul, but that whoever would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. Now, there's a groundswell of popular support there. Asa, bold enough to even depose here his own mother who had worshipped idols. It says in verse 16 that even Maacah, his mother, King Asa removed from being queen mother because she had made a detestable image for Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burnt it at the brook of Kedron. But the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days, and he brought into the house of God the sacred gifts of his father and his own sacred gifts, silver and gold and vessels. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. And then in chapter 16, we encounter Asa's human frailty. Facing opposition from Baasha, the king of Israel, Asa seeks help from Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram or Syria, instead of relying on God. And he sends gold and silver from the temple treasury to secure an alliance with Ben-Hadad, asking him to break his treaty with Baasha. Though this strategy succeeds in defeating Baasha, the prophet Hanani rebukes Asa, saying in verse 7, "Because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless towards him. You have done foolishly in this, for from now on you will have wars." And Asa's lack of trust here in God leads to a prophecy of continued wars. Asa, instead of repenting, becomes angry and imprisons the prophet Hanani. And then sadly, toward the end of his life, Asa suffers from a severe disease in his feet. Yet even in his illness, he seeks help only from doctors and not from God. And Asa's death is marked by an elaborate funeral with burning of spices and perfumes, a tribute to his legacy and his popularity. However, it was his failure to fully rely on God which serves us as a sobering reminder that human effort on its very best day is so, so limited.
This is Mission 66, and it's so good to be with you today, friend, as we look in the second book of Chronicles, chapters 13 to 16. Well, I'm Esther, and now we're going to turn to our teacher, John Matthews, to ask about this King Abijah. You know, we see that he receives so much attention in this book, Chronicles. Now, John, what is this covenant of salt that Abijah talks about in verse 5 of chapter 13?
Well, the covenant of salt actually refers to the covenant that God makes with David. Why salt? Well, salt is a preservative which prevents decay, especially in meat. In Hebrew, the covenant of salt was an idiomatic expression actually to symbolize a permanent covenant, one that doesn't lose its flavor, so to speak, over time. And the NIV translation, Esther, calls it an irrevocable covenant, meaning one that can't run out or be done away with.
All right. Well, in verse 9 of chapter 14, we find this 1 million soldier army coming from Ethiopia to attack Judah. I mean, that's an incredibly sized army. But we know that Ethiopia wasn't quite a superpower in that time. So I'm curious how they could have assembled such a massive army to attack their enemy.
Yeah, well, actually, Esther, the Hebrew text refers to the Cushites, and the land of Ethiopia was historically referred to as the land of Cush. Now, these numbers may pose interpretation issues when compared to our current numerical system. The number may have been a round figure, simply showing that the Ethiopians had more men than Judah. But it's important to realize that Ethiopia, or Cush, mentioned in the Bible, isn't the Ethiopia we know today. This Ethiopia was located south, just south of Egypt. And what's happening here is that Egypt was actually, it seems, the power behind this military campaign. They had a general from the southern region closer to what is now Sudan leading their forces. So this Ethiopian general, I would imagine originating from Sudan, is commanding an Egyptian army. And so it's another instance of Egypt's geopolitical interest in controlling the region of Palestine and indeed Israel.
Very interesting. Well, I do have another intriguing question, okay? At the end of chapter 16, it does mention that King Asa's illness was in his feet and he was criticized for relying on physicians. Now, can you imagine that you know what I'm going to ask here, John? Do you think that this means that we shouldn't go to a doctor when we're sick?
No, absolutely not. There's a reason why there are doctors and a medical industry. We're human, subject to all kinds of frailties and illness. And we gain medical advice through the wisdom and the learning that the doctors have. No, we can't make that comparison at all. The sin of Asa, we're told here, was in only going to the doctors while refusing to seek out the Lord. And these are not doctors, nor would they have the medical insight anywhere near to our modern day. So it's impossible to compare them. Yeah, so yeah, look, in summary, no, it's not something that can be compared to our modern day.
Well, thanks for clarifying that for us. I think it's important to know that. Okay, well, regarding now this burning of spices and perfumes in Asa's honor, could this in any way be describing cremation?
No, Asa wasn't cremated. Asa's body would have been buried. That was the custom. And the burning of spices was just purely ceremonial, which was common practice in ancient Israel as a way to pay homage to the dead.
Okay, so what then can we make of cremation, John? Is it okay? And by that I mean, you know, does it affect the resurrection of the faithful dead?
Yeah, well, look, seeing as you asked, cremation is widely practiced and it's a personal choice. I mean, the reality is once we're dead, the body is no longer part of who we are. It doesn't matter what happens to the remains whatsoever. And remember what happens to a body as well that is buried. It turns to dust. And remember, the Bible says, most importantly, that it's not about what becomes of our old bodies, because they are, you know, our spirits are eternal and they live in what the Bible describes as a tent. The body is just a tent that we will not have in eternity, because the Bible actually says that when Jesus returns, those who believed in him receive glorified imperishable bodies. And so the old body will be done and dusted and we'll have nothing more to do with that. We receive new bodies that will never, ever, ever become sick, ill, or deteriorate.
Yeah, well, that was really good. And I think that's such an encouragement for us who are trusting in the Lord, waiting for that day where we'll be given our glorified bodies. But let's look back at the text now, because earlier Asa trusted God when he'd been facing off against Zerah, the Ethiopian prince. But then later we see that he made this political alliance with Syria when the northern kingdom of Israel wanted to wage war against him. So what was that about? Why this shift, right? Trusting in God one moment and then suddenly relying on foreign allies the next? What do you think his play was here?
I don't know. I mean, it's, look, if we put ourselves in that situation, we do that all the time, don't we? We see God do a miracle for us one day, but we're perhaps afraid he might not do it again. So we need to answer our prayers in our own way, and we circumvent situations. We get involved and try to accelerate them. And so, the reality is, as human beings who are fallen and prone to wander and prone to relying upon our own strength if things aren't happening, you know, one person can act righteously or rightly and trusting in God in one situation and fall in the very next. And in Asa's case, when faced with the Ethiopian army of a million men, he realizes he has no chance. It was like Elijah confronting the 450 prophets of Baal. He knew he needed divine intervention. But in this scenario, Asa is opposing Israel and his faith failed, and he starts relying on human strategy and he makes an alliance with Syria. And God rebukes Asa for doing this, but it does indicate that Asa had, I suppose, his faith was rocked, and he didn't have the faith in God as he neared the end of his life that he had when he was younger.
Jeff, how many of us could actually attest to that? I mean, my hand is up first. Well, John, thank you so much. That was a really great look through the book of 2 Chronicles, those chapters in particular. So what are the key takeaways that we can get from these chapters?
Yeah, well, Esther, 2 Chronicles 13 to 16, it's dealing really with human frailty. King Abijah feels that he has to force Israel back into line through human effort. And while his son Asa initially trusts God, such as when he gets the victory over the massive Ethiopian army, his reliance on human solutions in latter years speaks about his failing faith in God. In his earlier reign, Asa had sought God's guidance, eliminating idol worship and fortifying Judah during a period of peace. However, when he's faced with conflict against Israel's King Baasha, Asa turns to an alliance with Syria instead of seeking the help of God. And that decision leads to a rebuke from the prophet Hanani, who reminds Asa of his earlier triumphs when he had trusted God. But towards the end of his life, Asa suffers a severe foot disease, but he seeks help from physicians alone, neglecting to turn to God. His error was not in consulting doctors. No, but in failing to seek God alongside medical assistance. You know, Solomon, it was himself who wrote in Proverbs chapter 3, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all that you do, and he will show you which path to take." You know, human solutions will often seem more practical and quicker, but there is no one like God. He is all-seeing and all-knowing and knows by far what is best for us. And so, in a way, Esther, Asa's legacy is both inspiring and sobering, demonstrating the importance of consistent faith and reliance in God throughout life. And God will give wisdom and direction without doubt, if we put him first.
Well, that certainly is a great way to end off today's episode of Mission 66. And we're definitely looking forward to the continuation of this exciting study through 2 Chronicles. Well, friend, if you'd like to continue this conversation with us, I'd invite you to check out our Facebook page, search Mission 66, and leave your comment below, or perhaps you might even have a question. We'd love to engage you on that, and you can be part of our global community where we are indeed sharing the truth of God's Word. Well, I'm Esther for our entire team, saying looking forward to next time.
As we close today's program, take a minute to download your free study guide. You'll be able to follow along every single day. Plus, you can engage with the reflection and application questions so you can apply the teaching to your life. It's a great companion resource to the audio Bible teaching of John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. To get your free study guide, visit mission66.org. That's mission66.org. You can also support the ministry of Mission 66 when you visit the site. Your gift makes it possible for this great teaching to be heard in many languages around the world. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.